accession of 10764 rule 4.
Mr. Nye, rule 4.
Yeah, we attacked from the four quarters, you could say. And the top Edo attack was done in this formation so that at least one of the destroyer's torpedoes would strike her. She would definitely be hit somewhere. Well, while we were going in to close the Shawnos that run about 1,000 yards or less, we were still being fired upon by her, even though they were exchanging the heavy artillery between her and the Duke of York. But the 5.25s opened up on us, plus anti-aircraft guns also opened up on the four destroyers. So if you look at the attack that the British were making against the destroyers in particular, you couldn't cover four quarters. Not very well. So this was a very strategic and tactical effect, I think, that we'd had. And shells were literally whooping across. You could hear them whistling, the big ones between the two ships. And I remember going in and the captain giving the order to release the torpedoes. And she swung round very, very fast to get out of range again of these. But the Sommerez, who was on the other side doing the attack from downside, she got hit. 11-inch shell went right through her wheelhouse and director. So I think they lost about 11 guys aboard there. But we didn't know that she'd been hit. Obviously, when you're in action, one doesn't realize what is going on around you. You're mainly concerned with your own affair because you're busily engaged in keeping your ship in action. But talking to a friend of mine last night, he reckoned that the Shawnos was no need to have gone into action with the Duke of York, or the Duke of York had no need to go into action with her. Because if the destroyers had gone in on their own, that this was his version, if the destroyers had gone on, only could have inflicted just as much damage, if not more, without pulverizing the ship, you see. But that's not my version, that's a friend that I was talking to. Because one doesn't know if you're a CNC what your adversary is capable of doing, really. But I suppose in hindsight you look back at things and you say, well, if we didn't do this, we could be doing that. But it'd be nice to know from survivors of some of the Shawnos, you know, what their versions were, really. This is what I like to do. But that action, as I say, looking back at it again, was, to me, excitement builds up during the course of the day when you get information of what's actually happening. And then when the actual time comes for you to perform and you're in action, you don't have any excitement, you don't have any fear. It just disappears because you're too intent on carrying out your duties as such.
So when the Duke of York and the Shawnos were exchanging fire, did you get the grandstand view of it?
Well, yeah, because we were in action at the same time. We were firing our 4.5s, but as far as I believe, they must have been just bouncing off of her. You know, if they were damaging the superstructure, certainly, but they were hitting along the waterline. I don't think our shells were doing any damage at all. But if it was the superstructure work we were hitting, then we were doing damage, yes. Because it was like four greyhounds attacking a mad bull or something like that, you know. But that's how it appeared to me, because he got his four destroyers coming in from all angles, pumping shells into you. But also one incident that came out later was that the Stord, which I think was a Norwegian destroyer, they didn't pick any survivors up.
Any survivors from the Shanghai?
From the Shanghai, yeah. Because to finish her off, the Jamaica went in and put the finishing touches to her by torpedoing her after she'd been badly damaged and she was listing heavily. So she went in and just finished her off with a fish.
So the Norwegian ship didn't pick any survivors. Was that because they were Norwegian?
Yes, I think so. I think so. We also heard tales that they were lobbing grenades at them. Now, whether that's true or false, it's hard to say, but that's what the story was going around in our flotilla anyway.
Did you see the torpedoes from the four destroyers going in towards the shore?
No, it was dark. It was a night action. If you remember, it was the 25th, 26th of December. So it was not like the Russian trips where you were doing things in daylight. This was probably a night action as such. So till the star shell lit her up, one didn't know where she was even. At least I didn't know where she was. Being a director, it was pitch black. Until the star shells illuminated her, that's when I really saw what a beautiful looking ship she was.
Could you see the shells exploding?
Oh, yes, you could see. You could see the shells exploding, yeah. Orange and red flashes, and then you see fires. Right along the upper deck, you could see fires. It's an eerie sensation, really. When she finally went, we just couldn't cheer. No way. You felt sorry for the blokes. There was a border.
But at the same time, you must have felt relieved.
Greatly relieved, because another threat out of the way, you see. And then the next convoys after that were quite simple where we were concerned. Because we did, one or two more after that, after the Scharnhorst action.
Did any of the Scharnhorst survivors come aboard the Savage?
No, I think they were picked up mainly by the Jamaica. I think the Jamaica picked her up mainly because the destroyers went back to cover the Duke of York. But then that was when we realized that the Sumeris had been hit, because we picked her up on radar, and when we went back to investigate, it was a Sumeris that was just limping along, really, because she was pretty badly damaged. Even though we had splinter holes in us of shells that were exploding near us. I mean, I had one up in the HA director, which, fortunately for me, that the flap of the director was down. And it embedded itself in there. Otherwise, it would have gone through me.
And you say you didn't feel frightened in the action?
Leading up to it was more excitement than fear. And then when it got nearer and nearer to time, when you knew that he was going to engage her, fear stepped in. But once the action actually started, you didn't feel anything because you were too intent on doing the job you were designated to do. But the fear came again when one went in to do an attack, the torpedo attack in particular, because one realizes then one has to get within very close range to release one's torpedoes to be scoring direct hits upon her.
Did you see the Scharnhorst go down?
Oh, yes.
What did it look like?
A pitiful sight, really, to see a magnificent ship like that going to a watery grave. Any ship that you see go down, even a U-boat, the feelings are much. You tend to get elated because you've eliminated something. The threat from that U-boat or that surface ship is gone. And when you see something like that happening and you see the bows come up and then go suddenly slide under the water, you want to cheer, but you can't. You just can't.
So the Scharnhorst went down stern first?
No, she keeled over, turned right over, really. She did. That's what I saw of her, because we didn't wait. We didn't hang around anymore. Once she'd been torpedoed by the Jamaica, we were then joining up with the Duke of York.
What other memories have you got of service on the Savage?
Well, one incident was when we hit an ice field and we ripped our, must have been about 15, 16 foot gash in the bows, and we flooded the shell room was flooded. The provision room was flooded, and we was living on tins of salmon and hard dried peas. We went to Murmansk where they put a steel plate, welded on, so that we was able to get back to Scapa again.
How did that collision with the ice occur?
Well, out in the Arctic regions, it's very hard to define which is cloud and which is ice, because the horizons doesn't appear to be the same as out in the Atlantic or in the Mediterranean. The sky doesn't appear to be the same in color even. You see a thin white line and you think, oh, that's a cloud. And when we were going along at a fair speed when we hit this thing, we just ripped open a gash right along the starboard side, yeah.
Where was this, near Bear Island?
Just off of Bear Island, yeah.
And was this before or after the action?
Oh, this was after. That was in January, February. We went into Murmansk and we had to have a steel plate put on there.
How much water did the Savage take on board?
Well, we wasn't listing all that badly, really, because the watertight doors were shut, so even though it was damaged, it didn't immobilize the ship in any way. We made it to Murmansk and got a plate fitted up and then was able to get back to Scapa. That's when it all happened. I think after that we went into Immingham to get patched up properly, and that's when I paid off the ship. And so that was my last few months aboard her.
What ship did you serve on from then on?
Well, then I came back to barracks, and I was then put to... I did a petty officer's course at Excalibur. And then after I passed that, I came back to Chatham. And I was then dispatched to Gibraltar to take over as one contraband control service. That's going aboard neutral ships, examining cargoes for contraband. And I was there when actually VED came.
So when was it that you had those duties in the Suez Canal with the acoustic mine?
Oh, that was just after I left the Spite for a brief period, before I got back to the UK.
Was this in 1941?
No. It was the latter part of 41, yes.
What did those duties actually involve, and what ship were you on?
They were high-speed motorboats, really. And also on ex-fishing smack called a Crescent Moon, which was a drifter. They used to use old coal-burning drifters that we had in the fishery fleets before the war.
So were these minesweeping duties?
Yeah. And it was when the acoustic mines were dropped into the sewers, which were paralyzing shipping going through some... clever Boffin decided that we'd use these high-class speedboats so that the revolutions of the propeller going round would offset the mechanism on the acoustic mine to trigger it off the explosion. And when she exploded, the boat being that fast, going over the minefield, would hopefully not affect the craft in any way. Maybe shook up, but not to the point of being destroyed.
So they'd explode. Or blown apart.
Either astern or ahead or the sides, yeah. But because before this Boffin decided using high class speedboats, there was about five or six of them that were sunk in various parts of the canal which completely blocked it. So supplies for the British Army could not get through the canal, you see.
And did this idea work?
Was it worked quite efficiently, yes, to be quite honest, it did. Then after that, there was various things brought, like Kango hammers.
What were they?
There was a thing that lowered down over the bow of the actual minesweeper, which were these drifters that we were using, these fishery smacks. And you lowered that down over the side, and it was like a hammer beating inside a drum, empty drum, an oil can, for you know, those big 40-gallon oil cans, like that. That sort of a noise, and that triggered off the same sort of effect on the acoustic mines.
How do you spell Kango?
It was K-A-N-G-O. Kangos. Or it could have been C-A-N-G-O. I'm not quite sure.
But although you say it was effective, you got blown up.
Yes, because this one was very close inshore.
The mine?
The mine, yes. Instead of dropping, say, more in the central of the canal, it was over to one side, nearer to the bank. So she lay in shallow water. And this could have been the reasons for it, why she exploded prematurely. I'm not quite sure myself, but as I say, all you see is a blinding flash, and you don't know anymore after that, because the next thing you know, you find yourself in an Ismailia hospital. Sword and plaster.
That's what happened to you?
Yeah.
How badly were you injured?
Neck. Just here. There's a difference between one side and the other. This side is smooth and round, that side is not. Because it dislocated part of the collarbone. It wasn't, when I was plastered up, they probably didn't set it right.
So, with these Kango hammers, were they used on different kinds of boats, to the speedboats?
Not the speedboats didn't use them, no. We relied upon speed and the revolutions of your propeller turning round.
So you didn't use
to offset the mechanism. The Kango hammers were used later on. And then they also used the improvised with what we used to call a goal post, which was two steel shoes with a long bar separating the two shoes with a wire netting. And we used to drag the bottom like a fishing net. We used to drag the net and hopefully that this would explode it. But it used to be on a wire about maybe nearly 100 yards long.
So these were all Royal Navy ships that were doing this work?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Just going back to the Arctic convoys that you were on, when you saw the merchant ships hit, what did it actually look like?
It looked like if you can imagine a tin of tomatoes that have been unopened and put on a stove that is red hot, and it explodes. You could imagine the red tomato juice shooting all over the place. Well, that's what this looked like actually, a blinding red flash, and the ship completely disintegrated, and the tanks that she was carrying just disappearing into the sky, looking like little matchboxes. And then one had to take a lot of avoiding action when the debris started returning. It was rather frightening in most cases. And then seeing tankers also going up in flame, that was another ghastly sight. Because they just exploded. And the ammunition ships were just as bad, if not worse, because they literally blew the ship apart, they did. It was horrifying.